When you think of pulp fiction, you might think of cheap paperbacks with colorful covers, overflowing with even more colorful prose, their pages filled with hard-boiled men, dangerous dames, surprises around every dog-eared corner. And when you think of pulp fiction, certain names come to mind, like Raymond Chandler, James M. Cain, Dashiell Hammett. These men grew famous writing about a dark and cruel world, but the pulp fiction writers of the 1930s, 40s, and 50s also include authors named Faith Baldwin and Valerie Taylor. The Feminist Press is reprinting several long-forgotten pulp novels written by women. One of the first is In a Lonely Place by Dorothy B. Hughes, a story told from the perspective of a man who kills a string of women. That novel inspired a movie of the same name, and just to get in the mood, we're going to play a minute of that movie starring Humphrey Bogart.
You want me to help you solve this murder?
I wish somebody would.
Well, first you have to have enough imagination to visualize the crime.
Here, get up.
Now, you're the killer. You're driving the car. This is the front seat. You're driving up the canyon. Your left hand's on the wheel. You put your right arm around her neck. You get to a lonely place in the road, and you begin to squeeze. You're driving the car, and you're strangling her. You don't see her bulging eyes or protruding tongue. Go ahead, bruv. Squeeze harder. You love her, and she's deceived you. You hate her patronizing attitude. She looks down on you. She's impressed with celebrity. She wants to get rid of you. You squeeze harder. Harder. Squeeze harder.
That's from the movie In a Lonely Place, based on a book by the same name. Jean Casella is the publisher of the Feminist Press, and she joins us now from our studios in New York to talk about this book and others. Welcome.
Hi, Steve. It's great to be here.
Well, glad to have you. You know, this story, In a Lonely Place, kind of gets to the heart, as I see it, I think, about why it's interesting to think about women writing this kind of trashy, violent fiction. It's a story about a man who kills women, but it's a woman who is bringing that man to life.
Rather than writing a misogynistic book, she was writing a book about misogyny, and specifically about the misogyny that came with the post-war crisis in American masculinity, of men coming back from the Second World War and finding a very different world in which women had been running things.
This guy in this book is a World War II veteran. He had killed people during the war, and he comes back, and he's at loose ends, and he begins to be suspected of doing terrible things to one woman after another.
And he actually specifically targets working girls, working girls waiting for their buses home from the office waiting at lonely bus stops.
And we should clarify, I suppose, these were not books that were probably written for the ages. These were books that were called pulp fiction because they were printed on the cheapest possible paper, and they were designed for somebody to read on the subway and throw away.
Correct. One of the interesting things about these books is that in terms of censorship, they really flew under the radar. I mean, at the same time that, say, William Burroughs' Naked Lunch was being prosecuted in open court, there's like racy stuff in these books. Yeah. And I think just because they were trash, nobody really paid attention to them.
So maybe you're getting a more honest or at least a more uncensored look at American life in the 30s, 40s, 50s?
I think so. I think, for example, The Girls in 3B, which is lesbian slash romance pulp, is really just defying all of our stereotypes about how women lived in the 1950s. Women in this book have premarital sex, they have unwanted pregnancies, they hang out with beatniks and take drugs, and they have sexual relationships with other women.
You know, we've prepared a reading of a portion of The Girls in 3B, and this is a scene in which one of the main characters is being seduced, is perhaps the appropriate word, by a woman she has met. Let's take a listen to the words of Valerie Taylor as read by an actor.
"I'm a very direct person," Eileen said. "I don't finagle around and try to put over a deal. Not where my personal life is concerned." She looked at Barbie, the long, straight look that had melted her heart the first day, as if she could see through her eyes and into her mind. "You're very young."
"Not that young," Barbie said low.
"I don't know if you even know what I'm talking about."
"I've known for a long time."
"You don't have to commit yourself to anything. I want you to think it over. But will you stay here with me tonight?" Barbie's heart missed a beat, then righted itself. She waited a moment to be sure her voice was steady.
She reached across the table and laid her hand on Eileen's.
Yes, I've been wanting you to ask me that.
Much later, when they stood together at the bedroom window, watching the soft flakes of snow drive against the glass and shatter, she said,
"It's what I've wanted all my life. How could anybody want a man when there's this?"
So, rather provocative there. Probably it's surprising to a lot of people that in the 1950s that people were getting books published about lesbian relationships.
Yeah, we did notice from that clip, however, that there were still some things you couldn't talk about. There was that little fade to gray part, and then suddenly it's the next morning. But still, this is really surprising for the 1950s. The third book in the series is actually the earliest, and it's from 1931. It's called Skyscraper, and it was published the same year that the Empire State Building opened its doors. And it's really about a woman entering the male world of business. And we like to say about it that this is the Sex and the City of its day. This is about women making choices about men, about work, about sex, and these choices are really going to determine what their lives are like. But the new element in the 1930s was women in the workplace. And the thing I love about this book is that it opens with these incredible descriptions of like the skyscraper piercing the sky. It's so clearly about, you know, women's entry into a male world. And the main character really loves her job. And the way that she describes her office with these gleaming rows of file cabinets and polished wood desks is just 100 times more sensual than the way she describes her boyfriend. Who, by the way, works in radio.
A very exciting and modern field in 1931.
Exactly.
We've got a clip from a movie that was made out of the novel Skyscraper. It was called Skyscraper Souls.
When you're my wife, you're going to quit working, too, see?
Oh, so I'm going to be your wife now?
Uh-huh.
Who gave you that idea?
You did?
Well, it's too bad you haven't got some originality and think up jokes for yourself.
Lynn, will you marry me?
No.
Straight to the point?
I just love these movie clips. And, you know, in this round of the series and in future rounds of the series, we are focusing on books that had films made out of them. And I think it's going to be really fascinating to look at the ways that the transition from page to screen was made.
How did this stuff survive? How did copies of it even come down to you?
Well, we have quite a collection of women's pulp fiction in our offices now, and there is a big underground of websites and used booksellers and collectors. The books in which there's the most interest have been books by men, but I think this series is going to change all that.
Jean Casella is the publisher of the Feminist Press, which is reissuing a series of women's pulp fiction, including In a Lonely Place, The Girls in 3B, and Skyscraper. Ms. Casella, thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Steve. I hope everyone enjoys the books.
For more on women's pulp fiction, including a look at their covers, visit our website at npr.org.